We're going to talk today about the Torah reading for Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so the Torah reading for Rosh Hashanah is on the first day, we read the story of Hashem Pakar es Sarah. Hashem remembered Sarah, and she conceived, and she had a baby some months later. We'll assume 9 for now, even though that may not be exactly the case. And she did not actually conceive on Rosh Hashanah, but Hashem remembered, according to most opinions, Hashem remembered Sarah on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, and that is what the Gemara says. And we read in the Haftarah, we read the story of Chana, who also was remembered by Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, and she had a child, Shmuel, who grew up to be one of the greatest prophets of all time. In certain ways, he rivaled Moshe and Aaron in his greatness. Okay, on day 2, we read, let me just add also, we continue after the story of Sarah conceiving, giving birth, and his birth, and the subsequent partying and celebration that Avraham makes. We also read the story of Yishmael being sent packing by Avraham and Sarah at Hashem's behest, and the subsequent near-death experience. I'm just going to mute everyone on the Zoom over here. Okay, so and the subsequent near-death experience of Yishmael, and Hagar basically gives up on him, tosses him behind one of the bushes, and an angel comes to Hashem and says, pick up the child. Hashem has heard his voice, Ba'asher Husham, where he is there, or what he is there. And miraculously, a well appears. She draws water, and she gives Yishmael to drink. He survives, and he becomes the founder of the Arab nations, which is a whole discussion unto itself. That's not for today. Okay, the Chazal say, Ba'asher Husham, that even though Yishmael was not the greatest person, however, during this illness that he had in the desert, as he lay there dying, he did teshuva and he returned to Hashem. And even though the angels, the malachim, said to Hashem, how can you save this guy? His descendants are going to cause untold suffering to the Jewish people. Hashem said, it doesn't matter. Right now, is he a tzaddik or a rasha? Tzaddik, okay. So then we have to spare his life. Okay. And the haftarah for the second day, the focal point of the haftarah for the second day is based on a pasuk, which we actually say in Shmona Esrei of Musaf. We say Haben Yakeli Ephraim Mielat Shashuim. We say these verses. Is Ephraim a precious son to me? Is he a delightful child? Kimi de Davri Bozocher Eskernod. That whenever I talk about him, I will remember him. And it's more of a rhetorical question. Is Ephraim, which is a reference to the Jewish people, a delightful child? Whenever I speak of him, I will remember him. Al Kain Homei Alai. Therefore, the verse continues. Again, we say this not only in the Haftarah, we say it in Musaf of Rosh Hashanah as well. Therefore, my innards will yearn for him, and Zohar as Kareno, I will remember him. Nu'um Hashem, says Hashem. Okay, so that is the Haftarah for the second day. So that is the Torah reading for the 2 days, and we could just stop there. Everyone can go home. But that's it. Now you know which part of the Chumash to look at. No, so obviously we're going to talk about more than that, right? So let's ask a few questions over here. The Gemara says that the reason why, as I mentioned before, the reason why we read about Sarah conceiving is because Hashem, as I mentioned before, remembered Sarah on Rosh Hashanah and he remembered Chana on Rosh Hashanah. Okay? 1 second. Hashem remembers everyone on Rosh Hashanah. That's the whole thing, right? That's Zechroinos. We say remembrance is Hashem. Checks out, judges, decides for everyone. Hashem remembered Sarah. Thank you very much. He remembered Chana. Thank you very much. He remembered me. He remembered you. So it's all happening in Rosh Hashanah. So why this sudden focal point that Hashem remembered Sarah and Chana on Rosh Hashanah as opposed to everyone else he did not? So some say the point is they were tzaddikim. So they were immediately inscribed into the book of the righteous to have children as opposed to, everyone else, present company excluded, who are just in between the Beinonim and they have to wait until Yom Kippur. That's what some want to say, and therefore they were special. But still, there were a lot of tzaddikim over history. Let me add to the question, the Gemara, when talking about people who remembered Rosh Hashanah, adds Yosef as well. Yosef was sitting in jail. Hashem remembered him. In fact, Yosef was pulled out of jail on Rosh Hashanah itself. He stood before Pharaoh on Rosh Hashanah. So why don't we read that? We don't read that whole discussion on Rosh Hashanah. Why not? I mean, Hashem remembered Yosef as well. So those are a couple of questions over there. Now, in addition, I left out on day two. What do we read on day two from the Torah? We read the story of Akedas Yitzchak. Okay. Why do we read the story of Akedas Yitzchak? Well, you may have noticed that during the course of the davening of Rosh Hashanah, we hark back to this Akedas Yitzchak business quite a lot. Okay. In the davening during Zechronos, we talk quite a lot about Akedas Yitzchak. Hashem, remember Akedas Yitzchak. And whenever we talk about Hashem, remember, we always say Hashem, remember Akedas Yitzchak. In fact, in Slichos, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which are lengthier Slichos. By the way, they're starting Moser Shabbos. For those of you who are not prepping for Rosh Hashanah yet, you know, how's that long ago? There's no time to panic. Start panicking, right? Slichos, this Moser Shabbos begins. This is the longest possible circuit of Slichos we have this year. But so in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, there's a special piyut, a special paragraph we say every day called an Akeda, where we talk about Akedas Yitzchak. We have a shofar of a ram. One of the ideas is behind it to remind Hashem, so to speak, of the binding of Isaac, of Akedas Yitzchak. We mention it in Zichronos. So Akedas Yitzchak plays a very central role in Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so I just want to pose the question. That being the case, why do we read it on day two? Wouldn't it make sense to read it on day one? If it's such an important part of Rosh Hashanah, I should read Akedas Yitzchak first and then read about Sarah. Yeah, very nice. Hashem remembered Sarah and they lived happily ever after and so on on day two. But Akedas Yitzchak should come first. So someone's going to say, well, it's not in chronological order because in the Torah, first comes the story of Sarah and then the next day comes the story of Akedas Yitzchak. That's never stopped us before in other holidays. You know, we read something that's further along on the first day and then something further back on the second day. So why suddenly are we so concerned with the chronology over here? So those are other questions I would like to ask. And the final question I would like to ask is, you're right, Yishmael is the story is in there, but why? So you're right, there is this element of Basher Husham, Yishmael, did Teshuvah and so on. But if we are reading about Sarah, that's the main attraction. So let's read about that. And it seems like, you know, Yishmael is kind of this afterthought. He gets thrown in. Well, we need more Pesukim, so we'll throw Yishmael in there also. Okay? You know, is there, how does Yishmael, the whole story of Yishmael, which is, it's not the happiest story in the world, if you think about it. You know, Avram is chasing Yishmael out of his house. It's difficult for him to consider one of the 10 tests. How does that end up in Rosh Hashanah? Those are the questions. I do want to give just a disclaimer today, and that is I don't think we're going to go back to Adam today. I'm very sorry. I know, if I would have read that in the email, you wouldn't have showed up. I fulfill that by just mentioning his name, Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Okay. And Rosh Hashanah, actually, the Ran says, does commemorate Adam being judged after his sin on Rosh Hashanah. So, but we're not going to talk about Adam today. I'm sorry. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about this. Let's start from an interesting question. The interesting question is this. We know that there were a lot of very prominent people in the Torah who were akaros. They were barren. They did not have children for many, many years. Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, later Chana, and Rashi asks, based on Chazal asks the question, why does Hashem put these very righteous people through this process of not having children? And they pray to Hashem. They have to wait and wait and wait and wait so long. And it's so difficult. And Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu mis'aved l'tzvos l'shel tzadikim. Hashem desires the prayers of the righteous. Therefore, he caused them to not have children for a long time so that they would pray for him. That's like a very cruel thing to do, don't you think? You know, it's like, well, I want to hear you scream, so I'll twist your arm real hard. You know, and then you'll scream to me, and then I'll hear you. There are other ways to communicate. You know, if you want them to daven, so, you know, tell them you want them to daven or something like that. Why, what is the idea? Hashem really wants the prayers of the righteous. What's the idea? Okay. And this is true for, we find this idea by Sarah, we find it by Rachel, we find it by everyone. Hashem wants the prayers of the righteous. So very nice. But why are you putting them through this torturous process just so that you can hear their prayers? The answer is as follows. I did not find the source for this, but I heard this idea from Rabbi Nochem Eisenstein Zatzal, who was actually Rabbi Summers Rosh Kollel in Boston. back in the day. And he later became a Rav in Lakewood. And after I got married, I lived in his neighborhood, Forest Park, where he was a Rav. So I heard this idea from him, and it's always stuck this idea with me because it's such an important idea. Probably why it stuck with me. Here's the idea. Most people who have children, as a certain now canceled comedian referred to it as natural childbirth. Some of you may be familiar with that routine. Okay, sorry, I'll explain later. Okay, it's all right. You're not missing all that much. But the point I want to make is with natural childbirth, for our context, is that there's a certain normal natural process life usually takes. Person is born, he or she grows up, he or she gets married, he or she has children within a relatively reasonable amount of time, right? It's the people who have a hard time who are the exception, okay? But the story is told of an individual who came to Rav Shach, that's all, and a relatively recently married young man, he'd been married, for let's say around a year, and he said, I want to invite the Rosh Hashiva to a Kiddushol. Kiddushol is like, the diminutive form of Kiddush. A little Kiddush I'm making for the birth of my daughter. So Rav Shach said, you're making a Kiddushol? He said, yeah, to celebrate the birth of my daughter. He said, I want to ask you. He said, if you would have waited 10 years and then had this child, would you be making a Kiddushol or you'd be making a gigantic bash, a huge party to thank Hashem for having this child? Well, I'd probably be making a big party. He says, so now you didn't have to wait 10 years. You had the child in the normal, natural, the way things normally occur. So you're just making a little nothing, because things went as they're supposed to go. So that's it, The reality is that we take for granted these are normal things. But the fact of the matter is that's kind of how it goes. That's natural. That's normal. That's the way the world goes. Now, does it come from Hashem? Of course. But it is contained within the natural cycle of the world. That's just how the world goes. Right, we expect certain things as part of normalcy, and it's when they don't go as planned that's when everyone starts to pray and everyone starts to daven and so on and so forth. Okay, and the reality is that for most things that come naturally, we tend to take them for granted, and they are just that. They are regular, normal, natural part of life. That's it. And of course, we recognize it comes from Hashem, but it doesn't have that miraculous idea to it, that feeling to it of miracle, of so special, because it is just contained within the natural process. So if the patriarchs and the matriarchs, when founding the Jewish people, in the process of creating the Jewish people, just went about the natural, normal way of doing things, well, then they would just be another natural, normal, regular nation appearing on the world scene. Right? Avraham and Sarah get married, they have kids, and their kids have kids, and their kids have kids, and they live happily ever after. And they're just another nation. Okay? But then the quality of those children, the spiritual quality of those founding fathers of the Jewish people, would just be maybe, some special, maybe more than normal spiritual stature, but their creation would just be another child is born in the normal, natural way of things. When Hashem causes things to go out of whack, when Hashem causes that the normal natural process does not take place and they start to pray, so then the child is created not through the natural process of the world, but from the prayers of that parent. It is the prayers of the would-be parent that is bringing about that child. When we say Hashem desires or wants the prayers of the righteous, it's not just like, well, I want them to communicate with me, so I'll make life difficult so that they should call out. That's not the idea. The idea is that they could get things just through the natural pathways. Yes, I'll daven every day. I'll ask Hashem and Shemon Esrei, and I'll say modim and I'll thank him and so on. But it's natural. It's normal. We take it for granted, right? Let's face it. For a person who has not gone through, let's just say, a health crisis within their family, we say Rifayinu every day in Shemon Esrei. But how much kavana is really put in? When a person, God forbid, is going through a difficult health crisis, or a loved one, or a friend, or family member, so then suddenly, the bracha of Rifayinu takes on a whole new level of import. So as someone once pointed out, why wait for that to happen to make it important? An ounce of prevention is a pound of cure, right? So over here, if it just goes through the natural process, and it's just regular, normal, natural kids, nothing terribly special about them. But Hashem wants their prayers, because their prayers is what is going to create that child. And by praying for that child, this child will be a product of the prayers of all the spiritual powers and yearnings and desires of that parent. Okay? And you find this explicit in the verse. It is clear. It is explicit in the verse. He thinks he's found a friend over there. That's the problem. Okay. As long as you don't pull the wool over his eyes. So sorry. Let me just make sure no one's trying to get in here. Okay. So, this is actually, this idea is explicit in the verse, because if you look at the Haftarah, the story of Chana, so what happens with Chana? She waits and waits and waits. Finally, she prays to Hashem, and the whole story over there, Eli, the Kohen Gadol, thinks she is inebriated. He accuses her of being drunk. She says, no, I'm just praying here quietly, and so on. And Eli blesses her to have a child, and she has a child. And then it says that she waits until he's old enough to go off on his own, until she weans him. And then she takes him to the Mishkan, and she presents him to the Kohen Gadol and says, here's this child. And she tells the Kohen Gadol, I have prayed for this child. So the Gemara is all story that Shmuel did something wrong. He issued a ruling in the presence of Eliyahu Cohen, who was already his Rebbe, and that was considered improper to do. And Eli wanted to condemn him to death for doing that. And Chana pleaded, please, you know, don't let him die. And the Gemara says, Eli told her, I will give you another child. Well, but I'll give you a different child instead, because he did something wrong. So Chana responds, says the Gemara, this is the child from whom I prayed. Okay, I'll give you a different one. What's that response? Response is, you will give me a different child. That's very nice. But you know, there's a different element, obviously, like why should she lose the child in the first place? But I prayed for this child. This child is not just any child begotten just in natural, normal ways. This child is a product of my prayers. I prayed for this child. This is the child whom I prayed for. You cannot replace that. You give me 10 children, but you're not going to replace this child as special, as unique, because this child is going to achieve great things, because this child is comprised, is built, is created through my prayers. You cannot replace that. With anything you'll give me, you cannot replace that. Okay? So that is the idea. That is the idea. But let's, so we now have this idea that when Hashem remembers, so to speak, Sarah and Chana, he's not just remembering them that, I'll give them, you know, what they want, and along with everyone else. We start off with the question, what is so special about Sarah and Chana being remembered in Rosh Hashanah more than anyone else? Everyone is counted and is checked and is judged on Rosh Hashanah, and Hashem decides and remembers, so to speak, everyone on Rosh Hashanah. So we have a partial answer. Partial answer is that you're right, everyone is checked and taken care of and so on. But for most everyone, it's kind of like just the natural order of what's going to happen in the coming year. You know, this person will make more money, less money. This person will be ill. This person will be healthy, and so on and so forth. All the things that go into the natural course of a year. But here, the idea is that this is something they had specifically worked on. They had built with their tears, with their prayers over the course of the year, with their pleadings to Hashem, please give me a child, over the course of many years. That was what Hashem said, okay, you've achieved it. You've reached it. It's ready. It's ready to go. You've put in the effort. You've built it over these years, and now you're ready to have it. That is what is unique in a certain sense for these children. But let's take it a step further. Okay. What does Chana do with her child? I just mentioned a few minutes ago. What does she do with Shmuel? You would think that a mother who waited all those years for a child would keep him at home for a long time. Okay. Forget about, you know, sending him off for high school. You know, he ain't going nowhere. You know, and he's not walking out that door without six coats. You know, if it drops below 65, that's what your average nice Jewish mother would be doing, right? For her only child for whom she waited so many years. What does Chana do? So Chana, and she says this in her prayers. As soon as he's old enough, as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, as soon as he's old enough to be on his own, you're talking about a kid a few years old. She marches him up to the Mishkan, hands him over to Eli and says, okay, he's yours. Take care of him. She devotes him to Hashem. And that's where he spends the rest of his life, serving Hashem. Right? Imagine this. Chana is waiting all her life for this child, and she just hands him over. In other words, Chana's desire, her goal in having a child, was not to have a child to fuss over him, to dress him in the cutest baby outfit, or even to buy him a borsalino or anything like that. I don't know if she came up before his bar mitzvah to the Mishkan and bought him a borsalino or not. I have no idea. But that was not what she wanted. Okay. Now, obviously, your average mother, you know, wants to have a child and to take care of a child and so on. But Chana was of a much more, a much higher level of spiritual development. That wasn't her interest. Her interest was, I can have a child in order to devote him to serving Hashem. That was her goal. And so the prayers that she offered were to produce a child of that quality. If most people have children naturally, and their reactions and their desire to have children are going to be natural maternal desire to have a child, to raise the child, to love the child, to have nachas, and so on and so forth. That's just how the world goes. When you have an individual whose sole motivation is, I want to have this child to become a servant of God, to become a great person who will, excel in spiritual development, to become a tzaddik, a talmid chacham, a great, great person, but so much so that I'm willing to hand him over to Hashem as soon as he's old enough to do so. I will not be there for him all the time. I will not hold him in my arms all the time. As soon as he's old enough, that's it. He's off to yeshiva. And by the way, you know, if you think today it's hard, if you go back 100 years to early Jewish America in the first half of the 20th century, before, you know, day schools sprung up all over the country, parents who live in out-of-town places, if they wanted their kids to get a real Jewish education, they sent, 10-year-olds off to yeshiva, to Torah Vadas or other such places. And they didn't see their kids. And the kids didn't have the greatest accommodations either. If you think yeshiva food is bad now, it probably wasn't much better, like in the 1920s and 30s. It's hard to imagine people standing on soup lines that the food was that much better then. So, but you have people. And many of those children became very great people. You know what? Because the mothers were willing to give up their children. Most mothers couldn't do that, understandably. But the mothers and the fathers who were willing to send off their children, those children developed because they were willing to do that. So Hashem says, for me to have a child that you want, the child that you want is solely for the purpose to serve me, well, then that's not just a normal, natural child. Then this child has to be developed of stronger stuff. Then I need your prayers to create that child. So Hashem withholds the ability to bear children until the spiritual power of the prayers is sufficient to create what the parent, what the mother really wants that child to become, truly really wants that child to become. Okay? So now, this idea of Hashem remembering Sarah and Chana takes on an entirely new dimension and understanding from just, yeah, it's Rosh Hashanah, and Hashem's going to check me out and see how I did the past year, and the Sai was going to be the next year, and it's scary, and it's terrifying, and Hashem should only, see good things and decide good things and so on. And that's just natural and normal. No, that's not what's going on over here for these people in Rosh Hashanah. What's happening over here in Rosh Hashanah is, and we've discussed this idea in past years, Rosh Hashanah is, we come before Hashem, and Hashem says, what are you doing in this world? How are you fulfilling your mission in this world? Right? What are you going to be doing for the coming year in this world? What have you done until now? I've given you life. I've given you food. I've given you family, whatever. I've given you clothing and so on. What have you done with it? What have you done for me lately? That is the question Hashem asks us every Rosh Hashanah. And we have to stand there and be able to answer that question. Okay. But for these people, for these individuals, it's not just about Hashem judging them and remembering them like everyone else, but rather these are individuals who devote their entire life to Hashem. And so when Rosh Hashanah comes along, Hashem responds in kind. Let me broaden this idea, expand on this idea a little bit. Hashem pokar asar, Hashem remembers sorry, right? This is a major part of Musaf Shemoneh Esrei. We have three major sections in Shemoneh Esrei. We have Malchias, kingship, we have Zichronos, remembrances, we have Shofars. So let's focus on remembrances because that is our focal point over here. Hashem remembers Sarah. Hashem remembers Hannah. Commentators, I saw this in two places. I saw this in Sifseh Chaim from Rav Chaim Friedlander. I also saw this from Rav David Koyen, who is the Rosh Yeshiva, Chevron Yeshiva, in one of his svarim. He makes this point. What am I doing when I say these verses? In Shemoneh Esrei, most of Rosh Hashanah, you're just saying a lot of psukim. And it says, da 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 da. And it says, v'nemar, 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 v'nemar. One pasuk after another. So I'm just reciting all these verses, trying to get the translation straight in my mind. What am I doing just saying a lot of psukim. And the Gemara says, well, you could say this pasuk, it has the word melech in it. Yeah, that qualifies. And that pasuk has the word melech in it. It qualifies. What about Shema Yisrael? Doesn't have the word melech. Yeah, but Shema Yisrael, in essence, is about God's kingship. That works also. So I'm just like trying to get together and make an amalgamation of as many verses about kingship as I possibly can, as many verses that have the word remember as I possibly can. And I'm just going to say them all, and that's going to be like some magic potion that will make everything work out wonderfully, right? That's what it's about. Just say lots and lots of verses. Now, surely there is spiritual power in saying those verses. There's no question about it. But says Rabbi Friedlander, says Rabbi David Cohen, there's more to it than that. When you sing those verses, the point is that as you act towards Hashem, Hashem acts towards you, right? That's always the idea. Kamayim panim al panim. We always say that as a face reflects in the water, right? So the face of one individual to another, same way your reflection in the water is exactly your face. So the way I act towards you is how you act towards me. Hashem is the same way. As I relate to Hashem, Hashem relates to me. That is the idea. To the extent that I remember Hashem in my life, Hashem remembers me. Okay? To the extent that Hashem is not remembered in my life, to the extent that I kind of push him out of the way and ignore him, so Hashem says, okay, you want to ignore me? I'll ignore you. No problem. Okay? We want to be remembered by Hashem. Not being remembered by Hashem is a terrible thing. You can say, sometimes you say, well, it's better he shouldn't remember me because, you know, all the bad stuff I did. No. If you're not remembered, that means you're not being written in the book at all. You want to be remembered. You want to be thought about. You want Hashem to focus on you and your life and what he can do for you to help you along for the coming year. To the extent that I remember Hashem in my life, Hashem will remember me on Rosh Hashanah as well. When we say these verses of each section, what we're supposed to be doing is focusing on the message of the verse. There's this idea of remembrance. Okay, and it's supposed to awaken us and arouse us to remember Hashem as well. Make him a part of our lives. Remember Hashem and bring him into our lives. You want Hashem to remember you? And to have a relationship with you and to take care of you, well then, you had better make sure that Hashem is remembering you, that you are remembering Hashem as well. If we had to say, who is the shining example, the paradigm of remembering Hashem in their lives, well then we could hold up Sarah and Chana as the perfect example of remembering. Hashem in their lives. Their entire goal over here is not for themselves, but rather it is to serve Hashem properly. Okay? That is their goal in life. They are including Hashem in their lives to such an extent that the most basic human desire to have a child, the most basic maternal desire to have a child, is focused on, not for me, but so that I can serve Hashem. Certainly by Chana. We'll talk more about Sarah very soon. Of course, that was the case, but we will discuss it more at length shortly when we get back to the Akedah. Okay? So it's not just Hashem remembers everyone. And by the way, he also remembers Sarah and he also remembers Chana. And so we talk about them, Rosh Hashanah, just as the example. No, it's more than that. Hashem remembering Chana and Sarah, Rosh Hashanah, is this idea of the ultimate remembering. It's the ultimate Hashem saying, you wanted to have a relationship with me. You remembered me in your life to such an extent that everything you wanted was solely for the sake of serving me, solely for the sake of bringing out the glory of Hashem in the world through your children. And to that end, I made you spend years building that reality. Right? So after you've built it and after you've created it, now you get it. You produced it, you built it, you put in the effort, and now you will get it. Okay, so that is really the picture of perfection of what we strive for in Rosh Hashanah, is that I am working in my life to some degree to bring Hashem into my life, and in kind Hashem will respond and come into my life, and what he gives me is coming from Hashem because he remembers me. It's not just Hashem says, okay, fine, you want parnasa, you want money, fine, take money. You want a good life, fine, have a good life. Leave me alone. You know, I'll just, you know, push the button and, you know, you'll go through some bureaucratic process and you'll get what you need and that's it. No, this was the ultimate of they remembered Hashem and Hashem remembered them. This was nothing, not going through the natural channels whatsoever. This was the ultimate in connection of relationship, of creating a connection that they brought Hashem into their lives, and Hashem said, fine, you want me in your life, you remember me, you want to build this, then I will remember you. I will give it to you directly at a child with a spiritual level unmatched, virtually unmatched in the history of the world. You will get those children and they will be builders. They will be creators. They will be leaders of the Jewish people of the world because you remembered me. And therefore, I'm going to remember you and I'm going to take care of you directly. Okay? It's very different. You know, if you, a person has what we call in Israel today, protectia, which is not a Hebrew word, by the way. What? Same word, protectia? Okay, I guess it exists everywhere. It exists in the United States also, just in the United States, we make believe it doesn't, but it's true everywhere. Yeah, you have, you know, you pull the strings, right? So sometimes you have, you know, someone in a high place and you call them up and you say, okay, I need a favor. So they say, okay, I'll have my secretary take care of it, right? But if a child calls the father and says, Ta, I'm in a bind, I need something, and the father, you know, he's not going to tell the secretary, he's going to go do it himself. You know, because this is a father to a child. That's a different relationship. It's not like, well, you know, we sat next to each other in shul for 6 months, 5 years ago, and therefore I'm calling you because, you know, I gave you the extra piece of kugel, so you owe me one. And he's like, okay, fine, I'll tell my secretary to, you know, send you a check, whatever it is. This is the real deal. That is a lower level of remembering. That's a lower level of connection. It's like, fine, I'll tell my secretary. Or it's like, no, I'm going to take care of it personally right now myself, because it's very important to me. It's very much a part because we have this connection. You are connected to me. You have a relationship, a real relationship, and I have a real relationship, and therefore I need to do this. That is what Hashem is responding to Sarah and to Hannah on Rosh Hashanah. Okay? And that is the ultimate. Now, for most of us to live at that level, not so simple. Not so simple. But we can hold it up as a paradigm of what it's about. Okay, I would like to propose that we read about Yishmael afterwards because of the reality that most of us are not at that level. Okay, hopefully we're not Yishmaels, but the story of Yishmael is the story of a child who has gone in the wrong direction and who in his moment of great need remembers Hashem. Right? He's laying there dying of thirst. Even his mother has abandoned him. She tossed him away and moved away because she couldn't bear to see her child die. And he's laying there dying. He calls it Hashem and he remembers Hashem, says Rabbi Friedlander. He remembers Hashem in his moments of need. And it's not going to last because right afterwards he recovers. And Rashi says that they settled in the desert and he becomes a highway robber because he hadn't discovered the oil yet. And after that, they'll still engage in highway robbery of a different kind. So, because every time you stop off on the highway, you got to pay for that gas. So, where do you think the term comes from? So every time you stop off at a rest stop, it's highway robbery. You know what they're charging you for a granola bar over there? But I think maybe I'd like to propose an idea over here that the story of Yishmael is a story of a lot of people to varying degrees. And that is that I'm not at the level to remember Hashem like Sarah and Hannah, that everything I do is solely for the sake of Hashem. Okay? But when push comes to shove, I do remember Hashem. Hashem is in my life to some degree. And even though I'm going to mess up later, and even though I'm not going to do things right, but Rosh Hashanah is, right now, I am in a place where I'm remembering Hashem. Where I'm standing before Hashem, I'm saying, I really do want to have this connection. And maybe it's not that everything I do is for that goal. But please remember me anyways, because when push comes to shove, I do remember you. And even though I do forget sometimes, but please remember me anyways. And that idea on Rosh Hashanah, Tasher Rosham, where are you on Rosh Hashanah? Yishmael is there with Hashem when push came to shove, when he was in trouble, he remembered Hashem. And that was good enough to spare his life. Okay? So for the rest of us, the message is maybe you're not Sarah or maybe you're not Hannah. But you could be Yishmael. You can remember Hashem when trouble comes. To some degree, you can remember Hashem in your life, right? Okay? And so we proceed from the paradigm, the highest point of remembering Hashem in our life, of that everything I want, even my most maternal instinct, is devoted to Hashem solely, to the Yishmael, who's not the greatest person, but who remembers Hashem in the moment where it really counts. Okay? And we fall in somewhere between those two extremes. Let's take this to the Akedah. Okay. That's already 8:40. Okay. Let's take this over to the Akedah. Okay. What triggered the Akedah? So Rashi brings down a couple different approaches. One approach Rashi says is as follows. Avram, when Yitzchok was weaned, when he finished nursing, which is, by the way, the same thing as Shmuel also, it's going to be important points to hold on to that, he makes a party. He makes a big feast, and the sultan comes to Hashem, and he says, did you see that party that Avram threw? Hashem says, yes, very nice party. And Avram says, and the sultan says, yeah, but he didn't bring one sacrifice to you the entire time. The whole party, he didn't bring one carbon to you. He forgot all about you. So Hashem says, what are you talking about? Of course Avram remembers me. You think he threw that party for himself? You think he wanted to show everyone how much money he had? Look at what kind of party I can make. Look at this upsharon that I'm going to throw over here. I'm telling you, this is going to shut down all the upsharons everywhere. You think that's all he wanted? Son says, yeah. You know, it was about him. Hashem says, no, not the case at all. Says Hashem, and I heard this approach from someone, I don't remember who. So if the person listens to this recording and he remembers who told me this, if the person who told me this approach hears this recording of this class, please tell me who you are because I can't quote you by name. But anyways, the person let me follow. Hashem tells the Satan, if I would ask Avram to bring Yitzchak himself on the altar, he would do it. So this message is very, very strange. Did Avram mess up or not? Was he supposed to bring a carbon? The first time you read this Rashi, if you ever read this Rashi, this is Medrash. So you look at it and you say, Avram messed up. So his punishment was he had to bring Yitzchak as a carbon instead of go through that trauma and that test to see if really he would bring Yitzchak himself as a carbon. Because had he, and you think to yourself, if Avram would have just brought a carbon at that party, this whole thing would have never happened. But he messed up. He didn't bring a carbon. He didn't bring a sacrifice. He kind of forgot Hashem. And so Hashem, to prove to the Satan, you know, this is a temporary lapse. Really, Avram is totally committed. I'll challenge him. He'll offer his son. That's a very strange. It sounds like, you know, Avram messed up. Sounds like Avram messed up. So to kind of prove his loyalty to Hashem, he'll have to bring Yitzchak himself. That's a very strange, difficult way to understand it. So whoever this person was, tell me if I recall correctly, and I couldn't hear it again because couldn't find the person. But if I recall correctly, he said the following idea. When did Avram make this party, as I just mentioned? After Yitzchak was ready to roll on his own, when he was finished nursing from his mother, right? Same thing as Shmuel. In other words, the same idea. At the point where Yitzchak was ready to embark on life on his own and serve Hashem, Avram made a party. What was this party? Was it just like the upsharon, which, by the way, is the idea. Also, the idea of an upsharon is you cut the child's hair. What do? He starts reading the Aleph Beis. In other words, this is the beginning of his path towards Torah and mitzvos. Avram makes the party not by the birth, not when he makes the bris. There's no record in the Torah that he made a gigantic bris party or a gigantic party plan, Shalom Zachar. No, you don't find that in the Torah. I don't know if he did or didn't, but there's no indication. He made the party when Yitzchak stopped nursing and he was ready to embark on his own onto a life of Torah and mitzvahs and serving Hashem. That's when it happens. Same thing as Shmuel. In other words, Avram's sole motivation for this celebration was to glorify Hashem's name. I wanted a child. You know why? To continue my mission of founding a nation who will bring Hashem's name into the world. And now he's ready to do that. He has finished nursing. He's embarking on that journey now on his own. And this entire party was to glorify Hashem's name. And everything Avram did was to glorify Hashem's name. And therefore, you don't need a carbon. A carbon is, I'm making a party, so I need to thank Hashem. So I bring a carbon so I don't forget about Hashem. Right? We have the Mishnah. Three people who ate over a table, they did not speak words of Torah. It's like they ate from sacrifices for idols. If they spoke words of Torah, it's like they ate from actual sacrifices in the temple. In other words, when you bring Hashem into your personal physical life, that's great. And if you fail to do so, then it's a problem. Then you're just, it's just self-serving. Essentially, you are idolatrous. You're serving yourself. You are just eating for your own physical pleasure. And so on. So we need that to plug that in there to give it a spiritual injection. But if the entire celebration is nothing more than a means of glorifying Hashem's name, of sending Yitzchak on the path of serving Hashem, and that's totally devoted to that, you don't need the sacrifice. And the Satan comes and says, I don't know about that, Hashem. Not so sure. So Hashem says, I'll prove it to you. I'll prove it to you that everything Avram does is solely for the sake of Hashem. He has no interest in his own needs. Everything he wants and does solely for the sake of Hashem. How am I going to prove it to you? I'm going to ask him to sacrifice his son. Now stop and think for a minute. Why can't Hashem just tell him, well, bring a carbon or do some other way to display everything he does for Hashem. Okay. What is the uniqueness of the Akedah besides offering his own child? But yes, on a basic level, that is the uniqueness of it. But on a deeper level, the commentators say that the uniqueness of the Akedah was that Avram's entire life's work, which was solely devoted to Hashem, his entire life's work is going to go out the window. Okay? Everything that he worked on to glorify Hashem's name in creation is going to go out the window. It's going to go up in smoke, quite literally. It'll go out the window. Avram has spent his entire life waiting for this child, not for himself, not so that he can embrace the child and hold the child, but rather so that he has a child to carry on his mission of founding the Jewish people, of bringing Hashem's name into the world. And that's going to be gone. Everything is out. So this is not just about everything I do in life is for the sake of Hashem, which is Sar, which is Hana. That's true. Everything I do is for the sake of Hashem. But here Hashem is saying, everything that you did your entire life, which was for my sake, is now going to go up in smoke. You are going to throw it all out the window because I said so. That's a whole different level of willingness to give up to Hashem. Sar and Chana are willing to, we see they're willing to build for the sake of Hashem. But are you willing to destroy yourself, everything you are, your identity, what you've worked, what you put your whole life into for the sake of Hashem? Right? We say, Chol nafshecha v'chol me'odecha, with all your life, with all of your ma'od, we say in Shema. Right? So the Gemara says, what is ma'od? Rashi says, ma'od means your money. Why? Some people, their life is more important. Some people, their money is more important. What does it mean their money is more important? You know, story, the guy holds up the fellow and says, your money or your life? He says, take my life, I need the money for my old age. Okay? But, what person in their right mind gives their money? So the answer is, and you've seen it, famously, when the market crashed in 29, there were people throwing themselves off buildings. They say it wasn't as bad as they make it out, but there was that reality. It did happen to some people did it. And the idea is, when something in my life is so central to what I am, to my life, that it becomes more important than life itself. There are many parents who would give their lives for their children. Why? Because my child is more important than my life itself, right? Ma'od is not just about money. Ma'od is whatever is me more than anything else. You have to be willing to give that up for Hashem. That's no small task. That's no small feat. It's not just about giving up your money. It's giving up what you are. Whatever you are intrinsically at your core, at your, whatever you identify with most deeply, are you willing to sacrifice it for Hashem? And this is Avram's challenge. Everything in his life was for this child. Not just to hold a child, that a child is going to carry on his mission. Are you willing to give that up? That is no small task. That's not building for Hashem. That's destroying because God said so. And it makes no sense. I don't understand it. It doesn't make it. And it's going nowhere. This is the end of the road. And I don't understand it, said Avram. I'm going to do it anyways. That is a step above Sarah and Chana. That's a step above. And that's why I think we read that Akedah on day two. Because day one, we read about Chana and Sarah and remembering Hashem, but remembering Hashem, everything that you do and that you create and that you achieve in life, which is no small level. Everything I'm doing in my life is devoted to Hashem. The next step up, and I mentioned at the outset, in chronological order, it goes in this order, right? But you need to follow the chronological order over here. Sarah has a child, whom she davened for, whom she begged, whom she spent her entire life begging for, because Hashem was part of her life, because she remembered Hashem, and everything she had was devoted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore Hashem remembered her on Rosh Hashanah, right? But that's Hashem remembering Sarah, because Sarah remembered Hashem in terms of what she's achieving with her life. And then after that, Hashem tells Avram, I want you to remember me, in other words, to bring me into your life. I want you to make me so much a part of your life that you're willing to give up what is most precious to you for me. Even though it makes no sense whatsoever. Even though there's no visible constructive purpose to this at all, it's totally destructive. And that is, and let me just finish this narrative over here. What happens? What happens afterwards? Yitzchak survives, right? So you look at the story and you say, well, you know, this was a very nice charade. Hashem pulled off. It looked like he was about to die at the last second. The Malach stays Avram's hand. Don't kill him. and they all live happily ever after. They all, he gets off of the Mizbech, and everyone lives happily ever after, and the Jewish people are founded. So Avram had this test, he passed it, and that's it. And life went back to normal, right? That's what we think. There's like this, you know, life is going. There's this blip, zoom, this very traumatic, exciting test that Avram has to go through, and then life goes back to normal again. Okay, we get back. Yitzchak, you go back to yeshiva. Avram will go back home and have some guests over, and everything goes back to him. No. The Zohar says, listen to this. You may have heard this before, but I'll say it anyways. The Zohar says that, and other sources bring this down as well, that Yitzchak had this is Kabbalistic stuff, and don't ask me any questions, but he had the soul of a female. Exactly what that means. He had from the female side, and he was unable to have children. You have heard this before, right? And on that altar, he actually experienced some form of death. Again, a whole discussion what exactly that means. It says, in the world of machshava, of thought, he died. In the physical world, he did not. But however exactly it all works, it's a whole discussion unto itself. The idea is we say that the ashes of Yitzchak are piled before Hashem. They are literally piled before Hashem. In a certain dimension of reality, Yitzchak died. In a certain dimension of reality, he died. In the world of thought, Avram completed the sacrifice of Yitzchak in his mind. His commitment was so strong that it was as if in his mind was so strong, he didn't have to carry it out physically because he already achieved it in the world of thought and his commitment. And in the world of thought, of mental commitment, Yitzchak died. And he got a new neshama of a zachar, of a male, and now he can have children. So think about this. If Akedas Yitzchak doesn't happen, Yitzchak lives, but he'll never have children. That's it. Jewish people are done. Through Akedas Yitzchak, so to speak, has some form of death. He is some form of resurrection. And now, through the very process which you thought was the end of the road, is in fact the very process that brings about the beginning of the road. You thought it was the end. It's exactly the opposite. It is the beginning. Remembering Hashem to that degree of giving everything up brings about a reality that you could not have possibly imagined, where Hashem invests himself so completely in your life that this process, which looked like the very end, is really the very beginning. And you never would have known it if not otherwise. Okay? Bringing Hashem into your life to that degree where I don't see where this is going. I don't see how this is going to work. It makes absolutely no sense. What do you want from me? What am I supposed to do? I don't know. Good. Just put one foot in front of the other and do it, because you have to do it. And you recognize you have to do it, even if it makes no sense. And by putting one foot in front of the other, that precisely becomes the means to building the future. Where you think it's the end, it's really the beginning. Okay? That's a whole nother level of zichrenus. That's a whole nother level of remembering, of paying attention, of bringing Hashem into your life. And by extension, of Hashem putting himself into your life as well. Okay, and so that I think is why the Akedah, perhaps, I think that's, I'd like to propose, why we read it on day two. That's a whole different level. Chana and Sarah are, you're right, their children are not natural children, but it's still part of a process that we can comprehend and understand and see where this is going in terms of the Zikaron, in terms of the remembrance, in terms of the paying attention to each other and bringing each other into each other's lives. But the story of the Akedah is a process which defies any sort of logic, any sort of anything that can possibly be explained and understood and seen until after the fact, when you see how everything fits together. To that extent of being willing to remember, to pay attention, to include the other in your life, even though it impinges on you, brings about that kind of a miraculous result. Okay, so I think that is indeed maybe why we read the story of the Akedah on day two. So I think we answer all of our questions that I started off with. Why do we focus on Sarah and Chana on if Hashem remembers everyone? And the answer is yes, but they took this idea of remembering to a much higher degree. What about Yishmael? Well, you're right. Most of us can't live at that level. So we fall somewhere between, hopefully somewhere between the Sarah and the Chana and the Yishmael, where we remember Hashem to whatever degree we are capable of and work on that our whole lives to bring Hashem more and more into our lives to whatever degree possible, even though I am giving up for myself to some degree. But all that is still within the natural process of things and building and so on. And then we have the Akedah on day two, which is the focal point of Rosh Hashanah. And we say to Hashem, remember that. Remember that, because that is the ultimate act, where Avram is making room for Hashem in his life, even though it completely obliterates Avram from the picture. He's totally out of the picture. He's giving up his ma'od, what is the most him. The word ma'od means most, right? What is his identity, what is his very existence and essence, he's going to squish that and push that out of the picture for Hashem. And in exchange, Hashem, so to speak, remembers Avram. Hashem allows Avram's descendants, Yitzchak, to be able to continue that path of Avram's existence, which is what he wanted in the first place. The very process of where Avram looked like he was giving everything up becomes the very means through which his existence is guaranteed for the future, where Hashem, so to speak, remembers Avram. And that is what we hark back to. And I think, just to conclude, the Haftorah that we read on day two, as I mentioned at the outset, Haben Yaakov Ephraim im Yelad Shashum, Kimi Dabri Bozocher Eskren Vod, right? That Hashem says somewhat facetiously, is Ephraim such a precious child to me that I should, is he a delightful child that whenever I mention him, I should be happy, right? But, says Hashem, nonetheless, Alkin Hamu Me'alei Rachim Rachamenu. Nonetheless, my innards pine for him, I will have mercy on him. So here is a whole new level where Hashem says, you know, I'm not really happy with the Jewish people right now. They're not really doing anything at all. Why should I remember them? They're not remembering me. Why should I remember them? Are they a delightful child that whenever I, you know, Kimi de Dabribo, that whenever I speak about him, Zohar is going to, I want to remember him. Yeah, you have, and you know, you sometimes you a child acts in such a way where you tell the child, I don't want to see you. Go away. Either you go to your room, I go to my room, whatever. Let's just stay apart for, you know, a couple minutes, a couple hours, a couple days, whatever it is, right? But at the end of the day, as a parent, right, that connection is still there. So that last message of Rosh Hashanah is that even if all else fails, we need to remember that even if we do mess up, and even if we are not bringing Hashem into our lives in a way that Hashem says, is he a delightful child that whenever I think of him, I want to remember him, right? But Hashem says, but nonetheless, but still my innards pine for him, right? When all is said and done, at the end of the day, Hashem is saying, you know, that's just reality. And I think that's also a message that no matter how far we've fallen, Hashem is still remembering us. And even if we don't remember Hashem as much as we think we should, right? And even if perhaps we think we're less than Yishmael sometimes in terms of remembering Hashem, but Hashem says, but still, you know, this is my child, and Rachim Rachmano, I will have Rachmanos on him. So the bottom line is that Rosh Hashanah is a day where we want to focus, among many other things, but one, this element of a year. And I think that the message of the Kriyas HaTorah is we need to remember Hashem in our lives. And Hashem remembers us because we remember him. To the extent that we bring Hashem into our lives, Hashem says, I will be a part of your life. To the extent that we say, thank you very much, you know, I go to Shul, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and that's good enough, and leave me alone the rest of the year. Hashem says, okay, that's the way you want it. That's what you'll get. That's not what we're looking for. Okay? To the extent that we work on remembering and bring Hashem into our lives, that is the extent that Hashem will indeed enter our lives and, so to speak, remember us, not just giving us the natural goodness, but the supernatural goodness, that level above where he is directly involved in our lives beyond just the what we take for granted. That's something we can think about and work on towards Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so I will stop here. I am finishing early. That's the first time ever. Thank you, those on Zoom, for coming. And Emir Tzashem, next week by the Sunsteins, we'll have class number 2 on Yom Kippur and the Book of Yonah.